not for a kid. So I didn't dig that more than 4 feet. That's how the graves down there, we had to get them down to 6 feet. And you know they've changed all that stuff. They never dig a grave that deep anymore. Dig them about 5 feet, and they're going to get that cement blocks around and put the coffin in, and I don't think they're more than about that far from top down to the heaven. Somebody dug a grave up there 6 feet deep. Come to bury the guy, why they didn't have them straps, so they got enough when they let him down. They wasn't half long enough, they had to go and get a bunch of ropes and stuff to put it down. No, they try to get by as easy as they can, I guess.
Well, when do you start hitting the clay pretty bad?
Huh?
When do you start hitting the clay pretty bad, right close to the surface?
Well, for the first 2 feet, you could get down pretty good. And after that, why, it got harder and harder. No, I was wet on lots of that grave digging, you know. Somebody died, why there was... Ask somebody to go and dig. Probably 5-6 men would go and dig that grave. There was no charge on anything like that. Nobody ever charged for it. Nowadays, why, it's different. You get one of them backhoes and dig it out. I guess you pay all from $25 to $50 for a grave.
Did it take very long time to dig in that clay?
No, it didn't take too awful long. You know, you can't work more than in a grave. Two men can work in there, of course, one on each end. And you'd have worked like heck when you're down in there, but you don't let it stay there too long till you tire out or anything. Somebody else would take it. That is up over on this other cemetery there. We had one awful time. A guy died, Arnold Orvig died, and we was going to dig a grave. So we got up to start digging, and all at once, why, they got in the head, they was going to shoot it. I said, no, let's not shoot it. Oh yes, we'll shoot it. So much easier digging. So they put in a charge of dynamite, dug down and loosened up the dirt. All the good that done, why, the grave was made a year or two right beside of it all. Into what they were digging, and that they have one time. That planks and everything else in there, I don't know how they ever got it out. Dip water and you know what it smells like coming from another grave. No. The way to dig them nowadays, what they can digging harder ground. Well, it wasn't harder, and we could dig it.
Well, which cemetery was that? That wasn't the Dry Creek.
No, that wasn't Dry Creek. It's up here where the church is standing, right out of town on the south side, where he was buried. Oh, the biggest grave I ever helped to dig was room enough to set 3 coffins down at the same time.
Well, Why was that?
Well, a car wreck and killed Tom Whitebark and Mrs. Whitebark and one son and one daughter. And we buried her down on Barrage. And it was no use to try to space it. We took the whole works and a lot of men there. We dug it so they just set the coffins down in there. That's the biggest grave I ever helped dig. Looks like we're going to dig a cistern or something.
Did you ever hear about those two girls that drowned around town here?
Yeah. I can't think of the name, so my wife should know.
What's the story? Do you remember what happened to them, how that happened?
Well, they went out on a raft up here, some brickyard up here, where they had the pond. And it got thrown off, I guess. And drowned. I think it was, I'm sure my wife would know the name.
Yeah, I've seen it in some place in writing, but I don't remember. That's okay. He was thinking of,
well, you probably remember the girls that drowned it up here.
The Knott girls. The name of Knott.
Well, you probably went to school with them.
No. They were, went more. It'd be more like going to school with Mary than it would me. My daughter. They were just out playing in a big pond on a raft. I don't know whether it was just the two of them or not.
Well,
but one of them fell off the raft and the other one went in to try to get her out.
Well, one fell off probably and the other one.
The other one went in to try to get her and they were both.
The raft tipped over some and showed that and all.
Were they real little then or were they already teenagers or? Do you remember?
No, not quite.
They're pretty young then.
One was quite small, 5, 6 years old probably. The other one was a little older, probably 10 or 11, something like that.
Oscar Knott wasn't either deep radiant here at that time.
Yeah.
I said, wasn't Oscar
Knott?
Yeah,
she said, yeah.
Well, he was here for quite a few years, I guess.
These guys that laid out the town here, that was that McGowan and Henry that laid out the town that started it?
Yeah, they was the ones that started it.
Did they work for Potlatch or how did they find out to?
Sure, there was nothing but the Potlatch concerned the whole thing. As far as Bova goes up there was nothing but a Potlatch man. He was seeing that they got all that land filed for and so that it could get in there and buy the timber. And Bill Helmer, I guess he was a locator. He took the lines out, so he was, and anybody wanted a timber claim, well, he'd take him to another place. That's the way that worked. And Hugh Henry, they wanted to put the railroad in so they could log their logs to Potlatch. Well, they logged. They had that mill of Plouse, you know, to start with. No. You know, Bowell didn't live there, up there for nothing, heck. He had that. That's the place if anybody come, you know, wanted to be located to work, working like them other folks going out there and miss your land. They had to have some place to live. Of course, they put up the hay on the meadows and fell tree barns there. And
so they'd stay at the Beauville Hotel?
Yeah. No. I don't think Bogle built that hotel. There was an hotel there, but I don't believe it's the same one that he lived in. I wish my sister would have been alive. Why, she could have told you. She worked there for 7 years straight for Bogle, as a waiting table and doing up beds there and help with the cooking. So you know, she knew every son of a gun that come up there.
What did she think of the place? I heard it was real pretty there before they came in.
It was real nice. All that tall, big timber stand up around them meadows, and that meadows was just loud, heavy with grass. Grass that stood up this high. That's the way all the meadows was up in here. Wet meadows and shea meadows and the whole works. Open spot. Grass, no timber on it. And up there at Hog Meadows, that, you know where that's at.
Yeah.
Well, that's the same way there, you know. That's where, let's see, what was his name? I can't. Well, he was an old wrestler. Thought he was, anyway.
Oh.
He lived there. Donner.
Donner, that sounds right.
Yeah, Donner, I knew him well. Of course, the old man went, and the boys worked in the woods there, and one got crippled up pretty bad, I don't think. Two, as far as that goes. Donner's meadow, you know, he farmed some out in Trash Green up there. The rest was in hay. But I don't know how many has had it after that.
Well, most of those meadows, most of them were just used for grazing, weren't they? I mean, most of them weren't cleared up and grown crops on in the early years.
Well, the early years, the grass just grew up there. And they cut that with the mower, and it's out slew grass up like that. And just a tick of a hair on a dog's back. I was with Nicky Joe up there, supposed to drive part team. Of course, I shoveled some hay too, but on a young punk of a kid. Him and old Russ Lawrence put up hay up on them meadows. And no, it looked nice in there, then timber wasn't taken out. Well, it was nice here too, if you'd wanted to call it nice when the timber was all standing. Like that field over there, there was no field. There was no field here. Big, nice, smooth yellow pines. 30 inches, 2 feet, and bigger on the stump. Oh, I remember when there was logging on that, mostly on that slope. Nigger Joe was logging a lot of ground up there. But I can't think of the name of the guy that logged in here. He was a big logger at the camp in here and everything, but I can't think of his name.
Did Joe do a lot of logging?
Huh?
Did Joe do a lot of logging?
Oh, yeah, he logged here and there, wherever. Ever he could get a contract, you know, and had a couple of teams and put in a lot of logs. Well, he had to do something to make a living. He didn't farm enough there to make a living. Well, it's not a farmland up there anyway. You can't raise anything to any good crop. Freezes too quick up there.
Where his place was?
Well, all of that land up in there. Borrow none of it. It ain't any too hot here, I'm telling you. I was looking for frost all last summer, as far as that goes. It's a lot of different from here and just off 4.5 miles off on the ridge. On the weather, you know, it's out there. I used to have plenty of stand there till the snow flying, they wouldn't freeze down. And up here, you know, that froze down last fall and the year before, but it was getting ripe anyway when it froze down.
How much longer would you say you get for growing up there? Another 2 weeks maybe or more?
Down on the ridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's longer than that sometimes. Well, right from our houses, that's why it took away late in the fall before it froze down. Cucumbers and tomatoes and all that stuff to freeze easy. They'll stand there quite a spell. Oh, I raised ripe tomatoes here as far as that goes.
Mm.
I had 2 plants last year. And the year before, I had 12 big plants. Yes, the boss good to start ripe enough to start picking, and I did. A bunch of deer come in and clean them out. Must have been 7 deer that jumped over the bank, and what they didn't eat off, what they knocked off, you know. And that's some layout. They come back afterwards and clean them up anyway, what was left.
Great.
And she gave her, and Jim's mother lived in that house, she gave her 4 plants to plant between the buildings there. She was gone and she come home and I told her on Sunday evening, you better pick them ripest ones and they'll ripen, pick them off and they'll ripen. Well, she said, I'll do that tomorrow. Tomorrow come, why, she had four big ripe tomatoes hanging there. Deer come and clean them up. Not that crazy for stuff like that.
Well, didn't you have deer out on the ridge too?
Yeah, worse than here, but they never come up much to my garden, but they was in the orchard all the time. I had a big orchard out there. It wasn't so big because I kept it cutting it down, getting it down. But there must have been 25, 30 trees when I left, or more. That's trees I never, for 2 acres there at one time. Apple trees, prune trees, pear trees. Sold a lot of fruit to people, company, bought a lot of stuff.
How good were the crops from the orchard? Were they dependable? I mean, could you count on a good fruit yield?
Oh yeah, when the trees was young, that's awful nice fruit. Yeah, Dad sold 250 boxes of apples to Postlet Lumber Company in the fall. Then I think they sold about 200 boxes later than that in the winter. Prunes that come out there at what's the name of the guy before Noga?
Jones.
Jones. He come out to the farm and looked over everything. He says, you take everything that's there. But we didn't pick all of them anyway, but picked them in boxes and everything and come up there, took the boxes and went dumping in an open truck, and I drove to all the camps. 2,300 pounds of prunes. A lot of prunes. No, it's quite a different down here. Oh, the prunes here are all right. That prunes on that tree there, both of them trees, and I got one stand there. One up a little house there. You know, they're not taken care of the way they should be. Out there on the farm, why even? You work that ground every year just like a ordinary garden. Every year, harrowed it and kept moisture in it. So they didn't fool with it. It's a lot of work if you're going to raise it. Like here, they stand out in the... Well, there's one tree there that's worked around. Because it's where our flower garden and her flower garden come up against the field. And I knocked the bank down there and worked up the ground. And I've worked the ground ever since. Had nice prunes on it this year. And last year too, as far as that goes.
I wanted to ask you a little more about Joe Wells.
Joe Wells?
Yeah.
Well, Joe Wells, when them Frank and Cromwells, they homesteaded on that side of the road where the road forks and out that way. They homesteaded that, and they come from somewhere back east. I don't know exactly where. But father to Frank and Cromwells had slaves. And Joe Wells, his father, was working for the Wells, his father, Frank Crom's father, folks. And that took the Joe Witt up here, and he took his homestead up here, see. That's how he happened to come there. He was a married man, and them other two guys, he'd have one married. They moved down there to Moscow, out of Moscow, a little where, a couple of miles, about a strip between the road and the railroad. They had a house in there and lived there for years. Frank died, and Cromie was left alone there, but he lived quite a few years after that. No, they had a blacksmith shop there, everybody, and Frank Wells was a horse doctor. Got a sick horse, go to Frank Wells. And before they come here, you know, Frank was telling me in one time in Crom, or to me and Dad was up there doing some blacksmith work for us. He says he had a racehorse. And him and Joe Wells, they slept with the horse all night, but he says we was drinking. And the next day when the horse got out, the bet $1,700, say, the horse again, $1,700. It was offered that for the horse. And the horse got out and he wasn't able to do a darn thing. Somebody doped the horse for him. That was broke.
This was Frank and Joe?
Yeah, there was boys together at that time, see, in Crown. And the old... And I guess they had the horse. Had the horse and the dead, but I guess they didn't say he owned it, but they said we lost the horse, and money besides, I guess. I did. So they broke even. Then they come out there, but Frank was no fool on horses. He had a stud colt or anything. Why get Frank Welch to castrate him? They all went up there. If there's a sick horse, why, he'd give him some remedy or something to give him anyway. He tried. Them days there wasn't much for medicine anyway, but he was nobody's fool. Dad bought a horse that had a white eye. Dad says he's blind in it, no. Says he's not blind. He had some stuff that he went bloated, like dust, and he went bloated in his eye. Imagine that eye cleared up and got like good. And I asked Dad what it was. So he said, I don't know. Didn't ask him. He says, it looked like bluestone or shock, he says, but Dad got something to blow into his eye for a few times and I cleared up. Otherwise, it's just plumb white.
You say it looked like bluestone?
Yeah, he thought maybe it was. Dad didn't know. Bluestone, that's what they used to treat grain with years and years ago.
To treat what with?
Wheat.
Oh.
So it wouldn't smut.
Oh.
Diluted in water, so much water. In a barrel and up the sack into it. Oh, that's on the thing they had for years, or treating grain. But after that, I don't know how many things they familiarized and sarasand.
Did Frank and Cromwells and Joe, did they pal around a lot together when they was out here?
Well, they went up there, was awfully good friends anyway. They went back together, but Frank and Joe would get drunk, but I don't know. Frank and Crom, I don't know if they even drank. No, that was... Joe had married and had three kids, a girl and two boys, Mary and Chuck. And
Roy,
and I knew them well. You know, Roy always used to say to Chuck, he was telling him what he could do, but he says, remember, you're a nigger. But they had the school here the same as the whites, so I don't know.
Why was Roy telling Chuck that? Chuck must have known what his color was.
Yeah, but you know, he'd do things, you know, that Roy figure wasn't going to be right. It wouldn't work with the white people that way. Roy knew his faults.
Well, did people care, though? I mean, did they give them any, did they have to watch themselves more than the white people?
No, I don't think they ever had any trouble with the white people.
Well, I mean, did they have to be more careful about, you know, I had a feeling they sort of fooled around quite a bit themselves, just like anybody else did.
Oh, yeah. There was people that would insult them all right if they had a chance. Got it. But old Joe wasn't a bad fella. My Oscar older brothers, they worked for him decking logs for years. Robert and Oscar. Gus worked for him in the woods. And baling hay too, as far as I went. He had an old team baler. He'd go out in the country and bale hay for people.
Well, was he a pretty good man to work for?
He wasn't a bad guy to work for. Dad argued, had a son, and him would argue quite a bit, but he never argued with the other men any. No, it was, as far as that goes, I guess the Welts has always got along.
I heard that Lou used to chew tobacco. Is that true?
Not tobacco. She used to up in Copenhagen. And she didn't care who knew it either. She had one heating oven up above the stove while she had the snooze can standing up there. Well, I guess all them women from, I think they come from South Carolina or someplace, used it. Because I could name a few younger women, like them Coles and they all used it. They had a different kind. It wasn't exactly the kind of Copenhagen now. Some of them used the nicer stuff and that later on, but old Lewitt, she'd had one of them.
5 cents straight if you bought the small one.
You stuck a stick in it?
Yeah, the only thing I ever seen was one woman using it. It looked like a little brush. She stuck that in there and in her mouth. But a woman up here, old Lou, she had a can that high of 5 cent boxes in there. If you bought that, come in a big can, it's just as much as 6 boxes of little ones. You got that for 25 cents out of 5. On the box, bought the small boxes, it'd be 30 cents.
Arthur Burke told me that she used to be able to spit through the knot holes in the cabin.
I think you found that up. No, I don't. That's left so many stories out on her that I could tell them, but they ain't fit to put in writing.
I've heard she was a very good cook. She really knew how to.
Oh, she was the boss, of course. When she said something, old Joe was, all right. So she had to say. Joe got drunk or anything, why he didn't argue with her.
Well, I had heard that him and Chuck were pretty tough too, that they were pretty strong people.
Well, I don't know. Robert and Oscar never kicked on him that he.
Well, I don't mean mean. I just mean that strong. I mean it.
No. I don't know, just about average man, I guess. He was tough, though. He'd jump in that old hay bale with his foot down, whatever big slug he'd get. Well, you know, I was jumping in a hay bale and shoved down 12 ton of hay in a half a day. Well, that's putting out a lot of hay with a team baler. So he wasn't noted for to give in anyway. He just plugged it in there to let big horses going around with the power. Sometimes you just had to pull like heck to it.
Oh, is that how they done it? They had a sweep?
Yeah, they had a sweep and it tripped twice down the round, see. And then when it stripped by, then then it was open. See, then you got put on another wad and jump down with your leg and stomp it down in there. And then when that goes in, why it got another halfway around, why it snapped again, why then that plunged through back with a big heavy spring, see. And that's the way that worked.
He did he do a lot of bailing around in this country?
Well, he done a lot, quite a bit out on the ridge, but he mostly done the bailing up along in here on these meadows and stuff. He always put up a lot, got a meadow to put up, and then he bailed for others up there. Old Lawrence, father to Don and Jerry, her grandfather, shall I say, to them.
Yeah.
They, him and old Joe used to be together quite a bit. They logged together, and then they got done by, they started scuffling, they're going to tear the old clothes off of each other. And I tore the pants off old Joe. Sat there in his underwear, his maloon pants was all tore and throwed away. And that was, he says to Lawrence, you go down and get me a pair of overhauls. Lawrence said, go yourself. And Lawrence's wife was at the store, and he, they all pulled out. My God, he sat there a long time, but he finally took and went down to the store and got his affair over. All the darn just got a laugh of it. Well, it happened to him too, I guess. He happened to have, he would have got somebody to go, but they wanted to tell the nigger anyway.
They wanted to what, the nigger?
Well, old Joe, he loved, tore the pants off of him, and he had to go and buy another pair.
Yeah.
And he had nobody to go get him. He had to go to the store himself to get him.
Well, I'd heard that Joe could have made pretty good money if he didn't drink so bad and spend it all that way.
He made pretty good money on logging. He logged all that from the highway and up where that meadow is at, up the winter of 1914. When there fell a bunch of snow out here that I never seen their likes. Out on the ranch, it lay deeper than the fence post. And then it come a rain on that. And it got so hard that it logged on it. It took and skidded logs right on top of the snow. He logged that whole side hill up, way up there, big nice yellow pines, and took it down to the spur, railroad spur that put down Pine Creek. And was for a while there, you couldn't turn the horses out there, no fences, they didn't see a fence. Cows, you get up and walk on it. But the cows wasn't bad. If they had the snow tramp down and had to go to water down to by the pond, why, they wouldn't drink, and they followed their trail. But the horses, if they got out after it went down, so I could see the wire fence, I turned the one and one out. They'd run on that snow and roll on it and kick up the heels, and that wouldn't make a mark in the darn stuff. Well, at that time I was a pretty good sized kid anyway. I got my brother when he come home on Sunday and Saturday to go with me out there on a strip of ground that dad had broke out. And trees are standing. He just left the big ones, big tamaracks, and the tree cords. We had to dig out all the snow and throw it away, and then we'd saw them right down to the ground, as close to the ground as we could. Fell down four trees. Well, I figured I'd enough than have another week. And it works so nice. I laid right up on that snow, and I was bucking, and I shoved that blade down there. Work it till I got it. And that's to keep the balance in there, see. The saw wouldn't wobble. I could just shoot them off. I made two cords.
No.
Okay. Bucking and splitting it. On that, for that snow, and that wasn't all when I was done. Why? I had 39 cords, a little better. I dug a hole in the snow that I could start the pile on the bare ground. I banked it all out in one pile. And I had to, snow that deep, I had to start in piling here, so to get my pile started. And after it got up, I could put it up nine feet and stand on the sled driving there and go right alongside of it with the horses along that bank in the wooden cave. So you know it was some snow.
How much would you be hauling in one load, you think?
Into town.
Yeah.
I let it lay over summer, see, and then I haul it next winter. I generally haul two quarts of the load, and that over them hills, that was plenty of a load. But you know, our kid is, I never got enough on him anyway.
Well, who was buying the wood then?
Buying wood? Up along the warehouse here. That side hill, all around that spur, was wood piles piled up 8 feet high. Some were double piled because they didn't have room. And they shipped that out. And they got a bigger price, $4. $4. I guess they got a little better. But to start with there, why, I don't think they got over 4.5 for Tamarack.
For a cord?
A cord. But I think Dad got on the last wood that I made there, why, I think he got $7 a cord. But you know, it wedges was nothing.
What were your brothers making when they was working for Joe? Did they make much money?
They got about $2 a day.
Did they stay with him and Lou?
And they had the bunkhouse, and they boarded up. When they logged down there, why, they had a cookhouse, and they cooked in that where Frank and Crown Welch used to live. That moved out. Mary cooked there, and the daughter, and they had the bunkhouse out there built up for the men to sleep in.
Well, how many guys was working for him anyway? Was it, he had a real crew there, huh?
Well, he generally had to have two gang of sawyers, that'd be four men. And then he had a swamper anyway for each team.
Six, and?
And then I had two men of decking them up sky high along the spur. I wish I had some of them old pictures. I'd show you just what the skid would look like one time down on where Lynn was logging. That was measured 22 feet up the top on the end of it. They took it around on the side hill, and the spur was up above. Well, they filled this old darn hole down in here, and then they rolled over the two men decking. They took them logs and rolled them on skids, laid in on top, and just stack them up, and after they got up so high, why, they didn't care to go anymore, why, then they took, you know, they had the blocks, see, they took, pulled them up with horses on skids and pulled them up, oh, as high as to the ceiling here anyway.
Big decks.
Big decks. Now it's, but Troy Lumber Company had, at that time, had 3-4 sawmills. That one at Dry Creek, and one over on Bear Ridge, and, well, I don't know, I think they had 4 mills going.
Was this mostly before Potlatch come in, or afterwards too?
It was before Potlatch come in and afterwards too. I stood and looked at a picture here that was taken out on Barry. Here's the picture that shows on the, that's on the, that's the, that's at the cookhouse, and that's where, that's the man that worked on the sawmill.
Well, whose crew was this?
Troy Lumber Company's. I used to know them all, but I had some pictures of them. Lind had the camp back at Spud Hill here. Worked up there, and they come up and they took pictures of the camp crew by the cookhouse. But I was inside of the cookhouse and I stuck my head out the window. No, that's a good picture for being that old.
Yeah. Joe Wells was like doing this gypo logging. Did he do it for many years? Did he have crews for over a long number of years, or was it just for a short time?
Yes, some come and went, of course. And no, it was different than when the Potlatch first come in here. You know that if a man come to camp, a hobo, and he didn't have work for him, why, go in and eat, there was never no charge. Go in and eat and stay and go to bunk house and sleep. Even if they didn't get work. You know, there was lots of people coming in and going out. Sometimes there was people coming from Spokane, and remember up at Camp Levin, there was a big tall guy. He come up there and wanted to go sawing. And they sent another guy, is the tall out there, and they sawed logs, and I guess he never seen out much in the timber, but the guy that he sawed, which was all right, I guess he told them how to do it, and they got along pretty well for 2-3 weeks, and this other guy quit, and they gave him another man to work with. And that other guy that I sent out there, he didn't even know where in the heck to stand when he fell a tree. He stood behind the saw with the hand. So, and can you imagine, he never said a word to him. This guy can come from Spokane. He let him, why didn't he correct him?
Well, did he keep working with him?
I worked a few days, and I guess they didn't make nothing, so that guy pulled out again. But
those, some of them lumberjacks, they didn't say much, did they? I mean, some of them guys, those I've heard that them older lumberjacks, like some of those guys, were pretty surly, or they weren't very friendly, I heard.
Well, that was in their own way, I guess, their own buns. Oh, some of them was all right. Now, Johnny O'Neill, he was a stump boss. He come out and look over to see that the cut clean that when they were sawn, and seen that they didn't take too high a stump. And he was always talking to him. He had a dog or two with him, and he was talking to the dogs. He didn't, he was one of them that talked to himself all the time. And he'd come up to me and my brother, Gus, and he kept talking, and Gus said, huh? Oh, he said, I was talking to the dog. All flipped. And Tom Malady and Jack Malady, Mallory, I should say, Tom and Jack, and they wasn't the oldest kind. I worked for Jack. I liked to work for Jack. He was a pretty good guy. Les Mallory, he worked, but I don't know just what he was doing, and I never worked around him. But Jack, he was out of Japan. I saw logs for him too. Out of Salt, out of Helmer, way out to go on. But them old guys, I don't know how many there was there.
Would you rather work Jippo than for wage?
Well, you made better money. You got 85 cents a thousand, or 75 to 80, or an 85 cents. If you could knock down 16,000-17,000 a day, well, you had better, you made good money compared with a couple of dollars, a dollar and a half, two and a half.
Could you knock down that 16,000 a day?
Well, we saw it out there, me and my brother, and we figured we should have 20,000 a day. We got a dollar a thousand. Well, around 115 and 20,000 a week. That is timber scale. They come out and scale them in the woods.
That sounds like good money.
Well, it was, but that is after the war, see, First World War, when we sought for him. So I think it's long ago. But that was nice timber. Couldn't be beat. We had a tree there that we felt that was over 1,000 feet in the first log. We had a few of them. So you know the timber was nice.
Real nice.
Yeah.
Alvin, I'm going to go soon, but before I go, I wanted to ask you a little bit about when you was growing up on the farm. And I was wondering when you started to work around the farm. How old was you when you started doing work?
I was 13 years old when I went. Well, that fellow that's on there, he wasn't going. His stepdad, but he come over and wanted me to go over and take a foot burner and three horses and go plowing too. They just cleared enough of that ground on the divide going down to where that big red barn is at. A I guess we put in 150, 60 acres there. 2 foot burners, and that's when I was 13 years old.
Maybe he doesn't understand what foot burners are.
They're good.
Well, I've heard of foot burners before, yeah.
It's a good long time ago.
13-year-old boy, you know.
Well, what was that like? You tell me what it was like working with a foot burner. Well, I've never even seen one. I've heard of them, but...
Well, it's a steering plow. You get a mold board on it, and you got two handles out there, and the lines around your back, and three horses on there, one in the furrow and two on the outside. Well,
walk all day long.
A walking plow, what they call it. Sure walk you, too.
Were you breaking the ground?
It was broke up, but you got to plow it every year for every crop, yeah. See. Well, I helped after I worked there so many years that the burner home. But you know, that's good money for a kid. I went out there in March, started on them hills, and I worked for 90 days straight there. I don't remember if it's $2 or $1.75 a day. I don't remember which now. And a half a day on Sunday.
How many hours a day do you think you'd been putting in?
Well, we started at 7 with the horses and worked at 12 and gave them an hour at noon, and I went back out there to 6 o'clock, 1 to 6 in the afternoon. Oh, it's great life. I got so I liked it.
Must have had a lot of time to think, you walking around there in a...
Well, you had to hold that plow, you know. If you hit the stump, you don't know why. You had to stand there and jerk and back up and get over the stump, and then that's so that you found a root that you didn't go through. It wasn't broke deep enough. And I was with when that, and cleared ground there too for him, but went up, crawled up in a tree with decking chain, 150-foot decking chain, as far as I could hoist it up, and then we dug a hole around the bull pines and cut off as many roots as we could, and then four had the horses abreast on a double tree and pulled them, and if it was too strong, I'd take them horses and throw them right back. But generally, and we cut as much as we could, but you know, them bull pines had a root that big. He had to sharpen that crowbar, and we couldn't get down with the axe while we used the crowbar on it. Oh, Lord, that's a...
How did you get the chain up the tree?
Crawl up into it. Throw her up when you got up so far. The higher you could get up, the better it was. No, I remember the first year I worked there. And then I went to... And when harvest come, I thought I was going to get me a job, so I went over and asked Nils Johnson for a job. He had a trash machine going down and buried two trash, and I never forgot the words he said. He says, "You're too goddamn little." Well, I says, if I can't make it, why, you can always make it out. And, well, he says, I'll see. But then when he went out, he come and told me, "I'm moving out tomorrow." And I never moving, but we're stretching out of shocks here. Pitching it on a wagon, they're taking it in right out of the field and into the machine. moved ever so often. I had to move the trap wagon team and drive that for Frank Davis. And oh, I got along pretty good.
Well, what was the main, was that the main job? What was the main work you did in that thrashing that year? What was that mostly what you were doing?
Well, we was pitching bundles.
You was a bundle pitcher?
Yeah. In the field, see. But then after we got farther up this way, we got into stacks that stood up 20 feet high, some higher. You'd crawl up them stacks, and then you pitch them into the feeder, right into the machine that stacked them up. Oh, I didn't. But he went out. Had that new machine, he had two big wide side wings, short feeder, and these other wings come out 14 feet. They could hoist them and lower them with a crank. Frank Davis, he was running the engine, he'd see that it got too far away or too high up or too high, he'd run down there and turn it down. Otherwise, the boss was supposed to do that, but that wasn't always done. No, I got along good with that two pitchers and anyone that, well, the stackings, you drove the machine in, and then you had only four stacks, and then they put the feeder right in between two and two, see, and the machine that come into that stub feeder, why, they come on these long ones and they went in like that and just went into the stub feeder and into the machine. You know, that's a lot of, well, 1,500 sacks in a day. That's a lot of grain, you know. Some of them sacks weighed, well, wheat weighed from 140 pounds to 145, 50 pounds of oats, long sacks. I'd weigh around 120 pounds, short sack 100 pounds. Now that's quite a life. A lot of in, I don't know. I liked harvest. I took in harvest, I guess. 10 seasons anyway.
What did you like? Why did you think? What was good about it to you? I mean, what made it so good?
Well, pitching bundles out in the field was a nice job as far as that goes. Sack sorts, I got sometimes three sack sorts and sometimes two. That's all I could do on 500 sacks you sow in a day.
Did you sow sacks too?
No, I did, but I didn't care about it.